listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Well, that's right. Living the dream once again here on a fabulous Saturday. It is Hartman and Schwartz with you in the Fox Sports Radio studios. Here we are, Jeff, on a beautiful Saturday, and the Olympics are underway, and I could care less. I have absolutely no interest in watching sporting events in empty venues with two or three people scattered. Sorry, been there, done that. That was 2020 for me. As much as I respect these athletes and living out their Olympic dream, from a viewer's standpoint, I am done with watching sporting events in empty venues. I have no interest in watching any of this.
You know, I think that's even beyond that, Stephen. Good afternoon to you and everyone who's listening. Look, because of social media and the availability of seeing a Simone Biles routine now, right? It doesn't feel like I have to watch it, right? Because guess what? If she has a great routine, I'm using her for an example because we know how special she is as a gymnast, I can see it on social media 15 seconds after it happens. And I don't feel the need to have to sit and watch an entire gymnastics telecast to find the one or two gymnasts I want to watch. I don't have to sit and wait for something to happen. I can go on my phone and find it. Or, by the way, we see it all the time now, right? Like, I've seen Simone Biles' routine hundreds of times now. And so I'm using her as an example, obviously, because, again, she's well-known. It could be anything. You could talk about men's basketball. We just watched the NBA Finals. I'm over basketball. I don't want to watch basketball right now, right? Like, you go for all of this. And we have so much access to this. Like, I watched almost all the Olympic trials for track and field just because it was on, I think, while I was working.
Yep.
And it was on the background. We used to not have access to all this. This is why I feel like all-star games, especially in Major League Baseball, are just not as fun anymore, right? I watch the American League play all the time now. Growing up as a kid, as a Giants fan, I rarely saw the American League play. I looked forward to the all-star game to see a player that I had heard was great or that I might have seen once on national telecast get to play in that game. Now I can turn on MLB TV app every night and watch Ohtani play if I want to, right? Or Ohtani's clips are now on social media, where in the past, like I said, I'd have to wait till the all-star game or wait till SportsCenter to watch his clip. So for me, the Olympics, like, again, if something cool happens today, I'll see it on social media happen.
Yeah, this is being shoved down our throats by the IOC. They refuse to postpone these games any further.
Once, by the way.
They did once, and they're not going to do it again. I heard Bob Costas talk about this, where, of course, for years he was the main host for NBC. And he said, look, the optimum situation is to postpone it when you have people available. The problem, of course, let's say you did postpone it another year and moved it to 2022. We don't know what the world's going to look like in 2022. And just like they postponed it for 2021. The reality is what we're seeing right now, we could have had a year ago. We could have had exactly what we have right now a year ago in Tokyo, with empty venues and the Olympic Village the way it is. Some of the athletes are vaccinated. Some are not vaccinated. They've had outbreaks. They're just going to pile drive through these 2 weeks and get it out of the way.
Yes.
And that is because, of course, the IOC's lifeblood are these broadcast contracts worth billions and billions of dollars. Now, we've already had some sponsors pull out of these Olympics. And think about this, Jeff, for a moment here. If you look at the demographics of who is watching these Olympic Games, and I'm not going back to the old ABC Jim McKay days. I'm talking about the NBC days. The whole thing has changed. Basically, it is a largely female audience. And the reason that they happened upon that is they tell the backstories, the human interest stories, and a lot of what's going on, the fanfare at these arenas where you have the families out there. They're in force, and they're holding up their signs, go, you know, family, blah, 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 or whatever, waving the American flags. All of that is gone. All you have right now is the cameras fixated on, like, I'm watching a tennis match here in an empty venue. We just had Wimbledon.
There's boxing on, too, by the
way. We have boxing we're watching right now. You have swimming going on, but you don't have any of the fanfare. All the cameras can focus in on is the actual competition. And I'm not saying there aren't women interested in that, but the reason there's such a huge female demographic is their ability to tell the behind-the-scenes stories. I mean, they're going to try to set up remotes with families in their homes in America.
It's not the same.
And I feel for these families, because this, Jeff. These families sacrifice so much to get their son or daughter to fulfill their Olympic dream. I am so sympathetic to these families that have put years in, big money, so that their son or daughter can, you know, realize this Olympic experience. And the fact that they're not be able to share that moment with them in person and have to watch on TV, I just think it's an abomination. It's embarrassing for the IOC. They should be ashamed of themselves.
It's not a good look. I mean, I turn on some badminton. It's funny about the demographic for who watches this. My wife today was like, and again, she's not a sports fan. I don't think she's seen one clip of Simone Biles in four years. I want to watch the gymnastics today. I was like, you do?
Mm-hmm.
She goes, yeah, tape it for me.
Yep.
I was like, okay. Like, you know, that's the demographic, right? Like, I don't really pay attention, but I know the Olympics are pretty cool. I'm going to put it on. I was like, okay, well, it's on at 8, I think 8 p.m. tonight. It's men's gymnastics. I'll tape it for you if you want. but like, for me, it's just, I'm with you. I mean, the fans don't bother me as much, I think, Steve. I think it's, to your point, though, it might be of a more symbolic thing than it is actual fans not being there for you. But you're right about the families and the atmosphere, of course. You know, full track stadium is that 4x4 comes down the stretch at the end of the Olympics is fabulous, right?
Absolutely.
And, you know, but again, I think the access to the athletes, the 24/7 nature of social media for all the sports makes these all-star events, for me personally, and I'd love if people were calling and if you agree, or tweet me, I should say, at Jeff Schwartz, at Cannon Hartman, I just don't feel the connection to the home run derby, the all-star game, the Olympics. And by the way, Steve, this is the first year I've been able to watch the Olympics since 2000. Because in 2004, I was in training camp. 2008, I was on training camp. 2012, I was in training camp. 2016, I was in training camp. You don't watch Olympics in training camp. You know, if you're walking by a TV, you know, outside your meal room and it's on, you put it on. But I'm not going back to my room and watching the Olympics. I'm going to sleep.
Right.
So this is the first year I've been able to actually watch the Olympics. And again, I might watch more than I thought I would just because we're in my office now, we're doing the show, and the badminton's on, Switzerland, Japan, I believe, a contest that is riveting. But I watched a little bit of the U.S. women this morning in soccer, and, you know, I'll get my kids involved with it. But you're right. The feel of the Olympics doesn't quite hit the same because there are not fans there.
How about the fact that they're going to have to put their own medals on? they don't even have the opportunity. I mean, how's that going to work? Are they going to put them on the podium? You have to pick them up. Everything that has made the Olympics. I've been watching the Olympics since I was 10 years old. That's 1968. Yeah. I love the Olympic Games. I love track and field at the Olympic Games,
there's
which is still to
me. In the stands for swimming, aren't there? Are these cardboard cutouts?
No. There are
the media members.
No, there's some cardboard cutouts. There's some media members.
There's
very
fans.
Limited people.
It's swimming. At least the swimming. At least it looks like not the full crowd.
Well, they're probably all on one side.
The
tennis is empty. The boxing's empty. It's unfortunate.
I'm with you.
It's really unfortunate
because it's
ruined the Olympic experience. Now, I want to get to this for a moment here because one thing we're not going to have to worry about is fans at NFL stadiums this fall. They're going to be full, and that is the NFL, as they showed in 2020, masterfully. There is a way to navigate, even when we were at the height of the pandemic, which was during the NFL season last year. Numbers were rising in October, November, December, January, and the NFL didn't blink an eye. And the reason they were able to do that is they set rules and said there are no exceptions. So what they've done now is they've set rules for 2021. And once again, no exceptions. When you have the power of the NFL that has a new collective bargaining agreement in place, that have new television contracts in place in which they had a 100% increase in revenue, they have all the power over the players and the coaches and anyone associated with the league. So if you think that you somehow stand out and that somehow your personal wishes will be considered over what the rest of the league has to hold up, I got news for you. Find new employment. They will not cater to any individual in this league.
So the NFL cares about one thing more than anything else, and that's their money, right?
Mm-hmm.
The owners, I think politically more conservative, right? Players tend to be politically more liberal, but we all agree on making money together, right? And now we might disagree on the percent of money, but we get together and we make a ton of money as players and as ownership. And what the owners care about more than anything else is their money. So to your point, they put protocols in place last year to play, and they're doing it again this season. And they are not going to budge for anyone. And we've seen now two coaches at least that have stepped aside because they're not going to be vaccinated. And there are different rules for the, and we've talked about this a lot, right? Unvaccinated players and vaccinated players, but also for coaches that are tier one and tier two, the NFL, again, has not mandated you take the vaccine, but you cannot coach. You cannot be with your players at all if you're unvaccinated. So, I mean, they're basically telling you you're taking the vaccine and you're not. So the Vikings have let go of their offensive line coach. The Patriots have let go of a offensive line coach. I wasn't quite sure if he's the main guy, the assistant guy. But, you know, there people will follow the protocols. Bruce Arians said, hey, look, we're going to fine guys $14,000 every time they violate a COVID-19 protocol. And here's the thing, Steve. It's just very worth pointing out, because this is very important, is while we've had two coaches object, and I'm sure more coaches have objected but have actually taken the vaccine, and while we've seen players, Cole Beasley, DeAndre Hopkins, Leonard Fournette, say, I'm not getting the vaccine. And again, that is their personal choice.
Yes.
It's a private corporation, is the NFL. They can go about their rules, right? In North Carolina, and really it stretches into Georgia, but you know, our two healthcare systems here announced Friday, if you're not vaccinated as an employee, you're out. You're out. October 31st. So, it's worth pointing out, though, that is a vocal minority of people in the NFL who are upset about this. They're often on social media, right? The loudest people tend to be a vocal minority. 16 teams are over the threshold of 85% that the NFL wants for kind of herd immunity, right? I think some are even over 90%. The Chiefs, for example, over 90% of players have been vaccinated, at least one or two shots, right? And so a lot of NFL players are getting the vaccine again, whether they want to or not want or don't. They're getting it done. I'd venture, because the protocols are very harsh if you are not vaccinated, that we will see that number continue to rise. It also is a competitive advantage this season to have more vaccinated players. Why do you think Nick Saban's team in Alabama has 90% of their players vaccinated? Why do you think Dabo Swinney came out of Clemson, I am vaccinated and my team is getting to that 90-100% threshold? Why do you think the best teams in all of football, college and NFL, right? The Chiefs, 90% vaccination rate. The Steelers, by the way, have had great leadership for years and years and years. They're one of the best, you know, the highest number of teams. Bruce Arians, very vocal about, you better get vaccinated. Why do you think all the top programs and top coaches in the sport are pushing it? Because they know it's a competitive advantage. If you're the Bills right now, who have had players be very anti-vax stance, and again, personal choice, you can do what you want, but let's say that the wide receiver room in Buffalo has three or four guys that are unvaccinated. It feels very likely one of them might get COVID. That room is out for 2 weeks. They cannot play for 2 weeks, Steve. So the Bills will go into a game with practice squad guys or guys that they sign off the street, and they might lose one or two games because they don't have a wide receiving core. And guess what? Those one or two games might cost them the AFC East. It might cost them a shot to have the one seed and that bye in the AFC playoffs. So that's why this is important. If you are and I know that no players on the bubble are listening to our show right now because they're preparing for camp, but if you are a player on the roster bubble and you do not get vaccinated, that is a bad business decision. Because if you are a player who's on the bubble and they are choosing between two players of similar talent, and even maybe the unvaccinated player is better than the vaccinated player, you're not making the team if you don't have the shot. They're not the 40th guy on the roster, Steve, is not ruining the season for the team.
And if they were trying to take legal recourse, in other words, you know, prove it. They can just come back and say, no. I mean, we just made a choice. This guy was better than this guy, and that was that.
Well, yeah.
That had nothing to do with their COVID situation.
No, there's no way they can, you know, the coaching, obviously, you can prove it more, I think. Right?
Correct.
You're not going to fire a coach right now
for
that. But for players, yeah, you can't prove that you were released for
but
COVID.
Even, but even in the coaching situation, what recourse do you have? You have no recourse.
I mean, you could. By the way,
guess what? The NFL would come after you full throttle, all right? And you don't want to go up against the NFL.
But also the NFL, like the Vikings and the NFL Council, I would imagine, shared an email before they fired the coach.
Okay.
Like they know what they're doing.
All right.
They're not going to be sued for this.
Okay, I want to continue this on the other side, but I want to get into what is coming out of the players' union. So the union is not exactly happy with this idea about forfeiture of games in which both teams do not receive a game check for these games. So what's coming up between maybe a few battles down the road between the players' union and the NFL, and how is this going to affect the NFL season? We're going to tell you coming up next. Steve Harbin, Jeff Schwartz with you on this Saturday. You're right, Jeff. There are people watching at the swimming venue, and we're still trying to figure out who they are.
I know, right?
Because there is nobody at the boxing arena. There's nobody at the tennis arena, but there are some people in the seats. Of course, we're only seeing a lower level, so we don't know what's above them or how big that arena actually is. But, yeah. All right. So, and by the way, that's another thing. I have friends of mine, Jeff, over the years in the media that go to every Olympics. Like, they always find a way to get credentialed and fly to the Olympics. Even when the Olympics were here in Los Angeles in 1984, which was the year that I started working for the Raiders, I was 26 years old. I had no interest in actually attending a single Olympic event, nor would I have any interest in going to an Olympic city. I mean, to me, the Olympics is about watching them and going, you know, from one event to another event, watching it. It's a TV experience, much like the Super Bowl. You know, I've actually covered 26 Super Bowl weeks, credentialed for 26 Super Bowl weeks over the years. But I've only stayed for four games, and that's because I couldn't get out of it. And I always feel like those are the four Super Bowls I missed. Like, even though I was at the game, I feel like I missed it. Because
I've been to one Super Bowl. It was a team I was rooting for, so it made it easier.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, you miss. I don't watch the Super Bowl for the commercial, so that's never one thing I miss. But, you know, the bathroom and your own couch and
your
own food, stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's follow up. We're talking about what's going on with the NFL right now. And in terms of how this COVID situation is a potential divider of teams, really a big part of it. But also, the NFL came out with a memo that ramped up the pressure on the unvaccinated players by saying that if a team has to miss a game, let's say you cancel a game and they can't make it up, then it's going to be a forfeiture, and that both teams involved in that forfeiture would not get paid. They would not get checks. And the union remained quiet when the memo came out. But behind the scenes, a lot of people are saying in the union, wow, is that tactless or what from the owners to pull something like that? Now, remember, we didn't have a forfeiture last year. And nor are we likely to have a forfeiture this year. So why exactly would the NFL come out with a memo like that saying, well, if it leads to a forfeiture, guess what? Neither team is going to get paid for that game. Why was that important for the NFL to get that message out?
Well, it was important to pressure the players into you know, getting vaccinated, peer pressure, right? Because if you lose a game check, your whole team loses a game check for you not playing, you're going to be, it's going to be bad news in the locker room. However, Steve, this is the same policy they had last year, that if you didn't play, you didn't get paid.
Right?
Yeah. We get paid to play on Sundays. I know that upsets players that you're there during the week, but you know, if you're a performer, right, you get paid for the performance. You don't get paid for the practice, right? So, you know, we get I mean, technically you get paid for the practice, but you don't get explicitly paid for the practice, right? The practice leads the performance, and you get paid to perform. We get paid to play football games. If we don't play the game, then you're not going to get paid. So same thing that happened last year, just we didn't see a canceled game. We saw a lot of shifting of the schedule. And the reason why the NFL is doing this is because they are not going to cancel a game this season. They are not going to move the schedule. They are not going to do it. They are going to keep the schedule as is. They're going to keep moving along. And if your team is not vaccinated, you lose a game check. It's that simple. And whether I agree with it or not, I think it's a pretty harsh penalty for the other team who's able to play, right? If you're able to play, why do you not get paid for the week? But again, they're doing this because they're trying to pressure the players into getting vaccinated as they pressure the coaches into doing it. I would be shocked if not every owner was vaccinated at this point at their age and whatnot. So I think that most of the NFL is. We know that a lot of players are getting vaccinated. There's a vocal minority. This is another reason for players to go get their vaccine shots.
All right, I want to give to this. I'm going to save a big story here coming up after the I know what's trending. But the idea of here in Los Angeles, by the way, masks are back. Okay, I was reminded that I was working out this morning and sorry, got to put that mask on again while you're working out at the gym. Of course, a lot of people just drape it around their neck, but they were pretty stringent. No, put that mask back on while you're working out here at the gym. Otherwise, we're going to have to shut down the gym and we don't want to do that. Getting back to these outdoor venues. And for instance, here in Los Angeles, where they didn't have a single fan attend either a Charger or a Rams game. They're anticipating, hoping, obviously, to make up for last season with a packed stadium for all their games.
Probably felt normal for Chargers fans, though. So.
Well, here's the thing about the Chargers. They sell the tickets to the other teams. I found it interesting. They really did a doozy. Did you see the Chargers schedule? Their first two regular season games at home are against the Cowboys and the Raiders.
Oh, they're screwed.
I mean, it's all Cowboy fans. It's going to be all Raider fans. I mean, they're really punching them right in the chin to schedule those as their first two home games in which they actually have fans allowed against the Cowboys and against the Raiders. The stadium is going to be taken over by Cowboy and Raider fans.
I mean, even if they play the Chiefs at home, the Chiefs have Kansas City West?
I mean, yeah.
Old Qualcomm. It was
There's no real fan base in L.A. Period for the Chargers. You know that as well as I do.
Even in San Diego, there was no.
It was an evaporating fan base in San Diego. But what if they decide here in L.A.? Oh no.
Ugh.
No, you're not going to be able to have a full stadium. That's not happening here. We're going to we'll give you 25%. Everybody has to wear a mask. And they're looking around the rest of the league like, you got to be kidding me, right? Especially if you're Stan Kroenke and you just poured $5 billion into that stadium.
It's, I don't think it's likely, but I think that it is something we should discuss, right? So this week, I'm coming to LA for the Pac-12 Media Day. I'll fly tomorrow, and the Pac-12 Media Day is Tuesday. And when I saw the mask mandate come out, look, I'll wear my mask, I'll follow the rules. I'm vaccinated, I feel great about it. I have no problem saying that. But, you know, you need to be vaccinated to do more, you kind of have more freedom at Media Day also. So, okay, I'll follow the rules, of course. But My first thought was about image, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have these media days for the SEC and for the Big 12, and we'll talk about all that in a second, right? And the Big 10, and they're these huge festivities and huge stadiums, and the TV crews are there, the radio crews are there. Everyone's having a great time. It feels like we've moved past Corona, which I know is not always accurate, but it feels that way watching the telecast. We're getting ready for football season. And now we'll turn on Pac-12 Media Day. And I got to note, like, you have to wear your mask while you're on the radio. Now, again, I'm doing radio, not TV, but there's going to be Pac-12 Network there.
Yep.
Fox will be there. ESPN will be there. And we're going to have our masks on again.
Yeah.
And the imagery of that after the Pac-12 played a truncated season is not good. It is not helpful. And I know there are people that disagree with me on that, but as someone who covers the conference and lives out east, and if the same is said for the Chargers and for the Rams and for the Bruins and for the Trojans, it's not going to be good news for any of those schools or programs or franchises.
I agree with you, and it's a potential problem, and it's a growing problem because some of the COVID numbers are going up on the West Coast. All right, we'll get to that, plus what's in a message? We got this huge story coming out of Green Bay. But first, let's find out what's trending right now as we welcome in Mr. Ralph Ervin. Ralphie, how are you today?
Just feeling Olympic, Steve.
Wow, you and your love affair with the Olympic Games.
It is glory at its highest honor.
I did see Dr. Jill Biden. Dr. Jill Biden's in attendance at the swimming event.
Sure.
First lady's there. So.
There's Olympic golf?
There is Olympic golf.
I was kind of kidding.
Yes, no, this is the second year that it's been back in the modern Olympics.
Yes.
Okay.
How much did you watch the last time?
It's not started yet. It starts later this week.
Later this week. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Did you watch, when Justin Rose won the gold? Was that exciting to you last time?
I thought it was quite exciting. It was tragic what happened to that golf course as soon as the Olympics abandoned it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what happened to that golf course?
It's overgrown and filled with giant rodents.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
The Olympics, like, if you host the Olympics, it actually ends up being bad business because all that money you spent, they just go to waste.
Well, if you build them, that's the problem. LA is perfect.
Agreed.
Yeah. LA didn't have any overhead because they just used existing venues.
LA needs a track stadium, I think, for the Olympics, right? That's it.
Well, they converted the Coliseum into a track stadium. There was a track at the Coliseum back in those days.
Now.
It's gone.
Right.
Now. So,
yeah.
And they will convert it. They will convert a stadium back, mm-hmm. but it's not building a new stadium. So.
Correct.
It's, some work.
It's perfect.
No, I agree. That's where the Olympics should be, just like the World Cup, where it was the highest attended World Cup.
Yes. Ever.
But I digress. There is Major League Baseball going on right now. Wilson Contreras has just belted a solo home run, his 15th of the year, and the Cubs, with a 2-0 lead over Arizona, they are now in the bottom of the fourth inning. Her second game of the day. Coming up 4 o'clock Eastern, the Yankees playing at Boston. And as mentioned, the first Olympic Saturday is in the books. Lots of team action for the United States. The American water polo team sinking Japan 25-4. Women's soccer bouncing back from a loss earlier in the week to Sweden. They crushed New Zealand 6-1. Men's volleyball sweeps France in three sets. Softball is 3-0 in their tournament play. They win 2-0 over Mexico. The Olympic medal standings, not so good for the United States. China are already leading with 3 gold and a bronze. The U.S. has nothing yet.
No, no medals.
No medals yet. Mm. No medals yet.
Mm. How dare us?
I would talk to the gambling expert that is Jeff Schwartz and wondering, what the over-under is on the U.S.
Does anybody care about, medal counts matter back when we were going against the Soviet Union and the East Germans? When that whole dynamic was going on, the Cold War, then we cared about medal counts. Do we care anymore?
I mean, I would like us to be on top. I think that's it's not going to make or break my day.
Right.
But
in those days, believe me, it mattered.
Oh, my God.
Big time.
There's Olympic surfing odds.
Yes.
Archery. Oh, boy.
Well, you
fencing,
must be betting
handball.
On everything right now.
Well, and keep this in mind, Jeff, as a reminder, this is all going on overnight West Coast time. Mm-hmm. It's a great time to go to Vegas as a sports fan.
Mm-hmm.
You actually can be up all night watching and betting Olympics.
I'll be in Vegas next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Raking it in.
Watching Olympic golf.
I mean, I'm sure I'm not going to gamble in Men's Skateboarding Street Edition.
No, don't do that.
Yeah.
That's what you think now.
Do you have is that all the results, Ralph?
That's the results for now.
All right, very good. There he is. Ralph Urban. By the way, we're going to check in with Ralph a little bit later on a different subject matter. But right now, I need to talk about, Jeff, what's going on in Green Bay. All right, so if you missed this, Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams both posted the Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Last Dance on their Instagram. And so there are three theories about what is meant by Last Dance and them together. A, that 2021 will be their last dance. And Aaron Rodgers will come back in 2021. And Davante Adams, they'll play together in 2021, and they'll both leave Green Bay after the 21 season. So that's one possible meaning of last dance. Another last dance is that they already had their last dance and that Aaron Rodgers is about to announce his retirement. So that's another theory about the last dance. The third theory about the last dance has nothing to do with Aaron Rodgers or Davante Adams. It has everything to do about their GM. Like, you've had your last dance. Get out of here, and we're going to move on with the future of the Green Bay Packers. So based on those three options about what they meant with their Instagram post of last dance, which is it? Jeff Schwartz?
Oh, it's one. They're both going to play this year. So let's go to the rumors yesterday about Aaron's retirement. So
yes.
I was on the golf course yesterday. On there rarely, but I was on the golf course yesterday. And I got a text early on about 11:30 a.m. like, hey, my guy in Vegas is telling me that that Aaron Rodgers is retiring, possibly today. And, my source is good. And I was like, whatever. I'll believe it when it happens. A couple hours later, I got two separate text messages with the same exact scoop, okay? Aaron Rodgers retiring, two separate other gambling friends of mine. Then we saw all the wagers get taken down, a lot of sports books, with the wagers with the Packers win totals and other wagers.
Everything up
involving the Packers
yes.
season. And then nothing happened, right? Rodgers did not retire today. He hasn't retired yet.
Yes.
It's worth pointing out that sportsbooks pull odds all the time. It doesn't mean they know that Rodgers is leaving. It's that with all the drama, they know that people are going to rush and wager on the Packers. And they don't want people wagering on something where they don't have a handle on what's happening, right? So that's why they took it down. It's not that Rodgers retiring today or he retired yesterday, and I'll believe it when he actually retires. Davante Adams has nowhere to go. He's not going anywhere. And Davante Adams, by the way, is upset that they didn't give him a long-term contract. Well, guess what? We all like getting paid, okay? Like, we all get upset when no one pays us. And so they're both coming back, Steve, because guess why they're both coming back? Because they're under contract to come back and play for the Packers. If Rodgers wants to retire, and he certainly can retire, and people think he will retire. I don't think he will. I've said this for a while now. I do not think he will retire. Sure. Go ahead, buddy. Be my guest. The Packers do not feel like they have wronged you. They have been to the NFC Championship game 2 years in a row. They have an all-pro left tackle, an all-pro wide receiver. They have players on defense that can play, and they upgraded that position with a draft pick this year and with a new defensive coordinator who should be much better than the one they used to have. So they're 26-6 in the regular season. They don't think they are doing anything wrong. Do they think maybe they should have called you about Jordan Love? Possibly. And that's the one thing I think Rodgers has a correct beef on, that, hey, they did not tell me about Jordan Love. Okay, fine. They should have told you. I agree with that. But get over it, okay? It's done now. It's done. This other stuff about they didn't keep my quarterback coach, they didn't keep the wide receiver I liked, that's not your decision, okay? That's not your decision. And I can see where, the Chiefs bring a whole new offensive line in for Pat Mahomes, and the Bucks go out and get Rob Gronkowski and AB for Tom Brady. Okay, fine. But again, there's not much for Rodgers to actually be upset about, in my opinion. Him and Adams, guys, you are grown men, okay? Can you stop with the Jordan memes? Just show up or don't show up, all right? That is very simple. You either want to play football for the Packers this year, or you don't want to play football. Just show up or don't show up. Like, stop with the memes, the passive aggressiveness. Show up. Because guess what? If the Packers were to go to Davante Adams today and say, you know what, Davante? We'll give you everything you want. Guess what he'd do, Steve? He'd re-sign today. So all this stuff about Last Dance and they would pay him. He'd show up and he'd sign his contract to be a Packer for 7 more years. So it's just like, it's just so silly, right? In this theme about Rodgers, it broke on the morning of the Bucks championship night. It broke that Rodgers was, he had this big contract that was offered him, which happened in March. And guess what? Everyone agrees that they actually didn't really give him any more money. They just, kind of that fluff money, right? That non-guaranteed money. So that's the way this gets fixed. But the Packers, this is a very important point, Steve. The Packers do not believe they have wronged Aaron Rodgers. And if they don't believe that, they're not going to budge. All right, Rodgers. Guess what? We drafted your replacement already. Do we want him to play this soon? Probably not. But we took a first-round pick. We traded up for Jordan Love. Guess what? He's going to play for us, and we're fine with it because we drafted him.
Well,
so the back and forth, like, just show up or don't show up. Stop with the memes, guys. Stop going on Twitter, Zadarius Smith, and saying, hey, I need a realtor in Green Bay. Like, just stop all this. Just stop. The thing that drives me most crazy about this, Steve, I have to look this up to make sure I was not crazy. I know the Packers won in 2010, right? The 2011 Super Bowl. 2010 season. I was kind of going through, I was actually driving today. I was driving back from a birthday party. I was thinking to myself, like, who are the participants in the Super Bowl from then until now? I was thinking, like, just the Packers drama, right? The Jordan stuff, the Rodgers, the Adams, the Smith stuff. Like, this is stuff that you'd think teams that have multiple Super Bowl appearances and multiple Super Bowl wins and like this long success, right? This dynasty, right? We're the Bulls and we're the Last Dance. They have not made a Super Bowl in 10 seasons.
Yeah. And
like, what are we doing with this?
Okay.
The Broncos have been twice. The Seahawks have been twice. The Falcons once. The Chiefs. Mm-hmm. Like, all these random mm-hmm. teams have been. The Ravens have won. The Niners have been. The Niners have been to two Super Bowls since then. Like, come on, man. Like, guys, you haven't given a Super Bowl. You haven't been a Super Bowl in 10 years, and you're acting like you're the 98 Bulls.
Well, Here's where I step in on Aaron Rodgers, and I've said this a few times. What is his motivation to play football anymore? Is he really motivated on the idea of winning another Super Bowl? I mean, how committed is he to that? Because you know this. He has a much better chance of getting to the Super Bowl by staying in a Packer uniform than he does going to Denver or Vegas. You yes. can't tell me he has a better chance to get
Correct.
To the Super Bowl
no, you're right.
with the Denver Broncos or the Vegas Raiders. So what exactly is his motivation? Is he really that motivated in winning another Super Bowl? Everyone can make noise. Oh, look what Tom Brady's getting.
He wants to be respected. Don't we all?
Aaron Rodgers is a superstar individual athlete in a team sport. I don't think he thinks in terms of team. Team is only a necessity to where he needs to be. And by the way, there have been other superstar players like that. In fact, I will give you an example of that. It's not necessarily going to please some people, but it's an observation I made over the years. I'll share it coming up next. Steve Harbin and Jeff Schwartz. Talking about the Aaron Rodgers situation, at least as of now, he is not retired. However, he posted on Instagram, last dance, whatever that means. Does that mean he's had his last dance or the upcoming season will be his last dance in Green Bay? We'll find out in a very short amount of time. But getting back to this idea of being an individually minded athlete playing in a team sport, and how does that play out? Because Aaron Rodgers is about Aaron Rodgers. I don't think he's worried about the mindset of his teammates right now. He's been in Green Bay for 16 seasons. He doesn't really give a rat's ass about their feelings right now. All he cares about is how he feels. Now, this is not unprecedented in the world of team sports. In fact, we had a prime example here in Los Angeles with an athlete that I grew to know very, very well over the years, and that was Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant was an individual in a team sport. In fact, even when winning his last championship, his fifth championship when they beat the Celtics, I remember a postgame he was asked, what does this win mean for you? And he immediately went with this. It means I have one more than Shaq.
Yes.
I mean, he looked at it as, see, when you are in a team sport and you talk about individual honors, championships is not an individual honor. You can talk about MVPs or all-stars or scoring titles. Those are individual achievements. But when you talk about I won five championships, no. You were part of five teams that won championships. But for Kobe, he thought in those terms. I'm not putting him down. It was just his mindset that I look at that as an individual achievement rather than a team achievement, understanding, obviously, he still has to be part of a team to get that achievement. And this is why I keep getting back to this whole Aaron Rodgers motivation. Like, what does he really want now at this point of his career? He's checked every box. He won a Super Bowl. He was a Super Bowl MVP. He's won three MVP awards. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. What exactly is his motivation? Because if his motivation is still to win a Super Bowl, then his best possible situation is the one he has right now.
Yeah.
On a team, as you said, that was 26-6 over the last 2 years and has had back-to-back appearances in the conference championship game. So this is the problem with some of these superstar athletes that are in team sports. Brady, obviously, is very different than that. But Correct. For a guy like Aaron Rodgers, every time I hear him, he reminds me a lot of the Kobe mindset, which was, that was Kobe being Kobe.
Yeah, Kobe has five rings, obviously.
He does.
And he went to six NBA finals, right?
He actually went to seven.
Yeah,
they lost to the Celtics Pistons and Pistons,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, that Pistons loss was all on Kobe. Why? Because he didn't want to have Shaq win another NBA Finals MVP. He literally shot them out of that series in an effort to be the hero of what they thought was going to be a walkover NBA Finals. I was there. I was in Detroit. Game four when Shaq was basically stuffing Ben Wallace into the net, and Kobe just shot him right out of the game. It was unbelievable. But that's how you had that mentality.
I'm glad you mentioned Tom Brady because I think he's a good example of, you know, the drive to win and also maybe feeling a little bit, you know, not respected by his organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he knew for a long period of time that sticking with Belichick and Kraft and the Patriots was the best chance for him to win. And when it became apparent it wasn't, he left for a much better situation to win. And again, he was a free agent, right? He was able to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Aaron would be traded, to your point, to a worse situation no matter where he went.
Absolutely.
And so, again, he wants respect from the Packers, but he wants it done kind of his way. And the Packers aren't going to do it his way. Again, they don't think they have been wrong. I want to make that point again. They don't think they have wronged Aaron Rodgers. And if they don't think they have wronged Aaron Rodgers, they're not going out of their way to make it right. Because a lot of us, look, sometimes we apologize to our significant other because we know it's the best thing to do. But other times you're like, no, I was right. I'm not apologizing. And that's the way the Packers feel right now. They're not apologizing for something they do not feel they did wrong.
All right. On the other side, we love our college football. But the look of college football is going to have a big, big change on the horizon. We'll tell you what it is coming up next.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, rolling along on this Saturday, Hartman and Schwartz in the Fox Sports Radio studios. Olympics are going on. Baseball's going on. We're talking football. That's what we do. Why? Well, because training camps have already opened, at least for the Cowboys and the Steelers. You know who I talked to during the week is the longtime voice of the Cowboys, Brad Sham, came on my show, Jeff, and sort of asked him about the situation with the Cowboys right now. And did you hear Jerry Jones the other day? He got all emotional. And
he's ready to make some money again, man. He's ready for life to return to normal. That's why he's emotional.
But I don't know. He got really emotional talking about getting back to another Super Bowl. I mean, there's a guy that understands the clock's ticking. And when you got all the money in the world and, you know, you know your days are numbered, you don't have much time left, what is there out there? And he started getting on this idea of wanting to get back to a Super Bowl. And he got a little choked up. And you know, because I asked Brad Sham, I said, is he still running the show with the Cowboys? And he goes, not so much on a day-to-day situation.
His son does the roster stuff, yeah.
You know, Steven, his son is doing most of that legwork there. But as far as final big decisions, absolutely, it's still his game. So we'll see how that plays out. I mean, we saw that at the end with my former boss, Mr. Davis. You know, it was sad. It was very sad at the end. Very sad at the end. And you know what's not sad right now is the evolution of college football. And I say that because this is something I brought this up 20 years ago. 20 years ago. You go back 20 years ago, and you would have heard me on the air talk about that eventually with college football, and this is when you still had a Southwest Conference, okay? I predicted that there would come a day when college football, Division I at the time, would be divided into four super conferences, North, East, West, South. Simple as that. And each of these super conferences would have 16 schools split into divisions of 8. Now, think about how this all played out. This is the way I had to play it out. So you have them split into 2 divisions of 8 each, and you never play outside of your own conference until you get to the Final Four. So your schedule would be this. You would play you would have 7 games against the teams in your half of the division, okay? So split the conferences into two divisions of eight. You play all seven teams in your half, and then you rotate 4 and 4 with the other eight teams on which teams you play to fill out an 11-game schedule. That's the way I played it out at the time. Then you have a conference championship game. That would be the 12th game. And then you create a true Final Four where you have no idea, like old school. Like, we don't know. There's been no cross-playing at all. You have a champion of the North, East, West, and South, and then you'd have the Final Four to get right to a championship. That was my proposal more than 20 years ago. So now what we're having is, with the possible defection of Oklahoma and Texas out of the Big 12, which, by the way, would end the Big 12, obviously, if they left, I see like we're going in that direction where you have the North or the Big Ten, you have the East or the ACC, you have the South or the SEC, you have the West or the Pac-12 constantly taking on teams, expanding maybe 16, maybe 18, maybe 20 teams. But I think when you look at the current format with 130 teams in the FBS, gone. Yeah. It is going to be survival of the fittest. And by the way, those schools that do make the cut are going to reap the financial benefits like they've never seen before. So that's where I see this going.
So this is off of Oklahoma and Texas most assuredly going to SEC conference, and at least probably 2025 is when that actually happens, when their TV deals, unless they want to pay to get earlier, where they might pay to get out next year. Who knows? And, you know, my first thought obviously is about the Pac-12 conference, right? The SEC is getting richer. What happens to the Pac-12 conference? There's eight teams left in the Big 12 now. The Big 12, you know, the Big 12 has 10 teams. Oklahoma and Texas are gone. It feels like we're moving forward to four conferences, 16 teams, right? 64 teams totals. We have 65 right now in Power 5. Now, to your point, you basically have it open to every region, basically. So you include group of five teams into that Power 5 conference structure, right? So, you know, this is just not good for college football. I mean, I have to accept it's going to happen, right?
Now, why do you say it's not good for college football?
Well, it's just not good for, like, we're both Pac-12 guys. Who are we going to add? What four teams are we adding that you're like, or four colleges, you're like, wow.
All right, you could add San Diego State, BYU, Boise State.
Well, BYU is never, those schools, see, to me, it's all about how do you make everyone, especially the schools that you have now, the most money.
Mm-hmm.
And BYU, Boise State do nothing for that. Maybe San Diego does. You add San Diego, their basketball program. I mean, look, their football program can compete against some Pac-12.
Well, they're going to have a brand new football stadium next year as well.
And, it has competed in the past, right?
Yeah, and they've beaten Pac-12 schools regularly over the last year.
Beaten Stanford, they've done a good enough job there. Adding San Diego's market feels important.
Mm-hmm.
But adding Provo, Utah.
Well, you already have Pullman, Washington, and Corvallis, Oregon. What validity does Pullman, Washington, or Corvallis, Oregon have?
But adding, so to me, if you're going to add, you're going to add a school from Texas. You're going to add a school from states that help you recruit and for more people to watch. So like to me, I'm not sure Texas Tech is a great answer or TCU is a great answer, but you at least get a footprint into Texas.
Why is Maryland, Rutgers, Penn State, why are those schools, Nebraska, why are they in the Big Ten?
For money.
Okay. So, but that, I mean, I agree with you. The geographical part of it may not factor in.
I'm not tied to geographical factor. I'm excited to add nobody. I mean, it's going to happen. The Pac-12 is going to add four teams. None of them to me scream like, wow, Texas, Oklahoma were those teams. And by the way, guys, Larry Scott, the old Pac-12 commissioner, who's now out, George Kolovkov's now in.
Yeah.
Welcome to college sports. He's much maligned to the Pac-12 conference, but he tried to add Texas, Oklahoma 2010. Remember, he tried to add six teams, right? Texas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, A&M, Colorado, and Utah. And Texas, Oklahoma said no. They got pressured basically by their local state governments to not leave. So this has been tried before. It's not the Pac-12 didn't try to do this. Those teams sound great. Great additions. I think there should be a solution where the Pac-12 and Big Ten find a way to work together. I don't know what that solution is, But if we're forming super conferences, monster TV deals, schools that align, and remember, this is really not to, I'm not going to argue this too much, but the Pac-12 wants a certain type of school, at least, you know, academically in their, same with the Big Ten. Like, they align, I think, with the presidents of what they want from their schools academically. That feels like, Steve, I don't know how it would work, but that feels like a really good way to form a major mega conference. Is and maybe part of that is they kick Maryland out and kick Rutgers out, and you know, they go to the ACC or something, and then there's sort of a Big Ten Pac-12 relationship together.
Let me ask you this. How much have Utah and Colorado added to the Pac-12? Well, I mean, we used to have just these perfectly, you know, we had the Washington schools, the Oregon schools, the Northern California schools, Southern California schools, Arizona schools, and then you add Utah and Colorado. How much have they mattered to the Pac-12?
I mean, for like TV deal? Just
have they
general,
added
I mean,
anything to the conference, the addition of Utah and Colorado?
Football's been better than USC.
Well, I mean, you know.
I mean, Utah's gymnastics, like, no one cares about that, but they're very good. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're so
Colorado?
Colorado has not done very much.
They're a great party school. Great party school.
So, again, the Pac-12's going to take on teams. I don't really feel excited about that proposal of doing so.
What did you think of my original proposal of 20 years ago to have four distinct conferences that never see each other until a Final Four situation? I mean, imagine you have no out-of-conference games. Your entire season is in conference until you get to a Final Four. How would you feel about that?
I think that'd be great, because then you'd be able to have kind of those powder puff games, right? You still be able to play in Oregon, Portland State, and Oregon, someone else, you know, I think that'd be great.
Because all those schools are eliminated. Imagine taking right now the 130 FBS schools.
Oh, FBS schools. Okay.
Okay. You take a 130 current schools and whittle it down to 64. So you take
so you
literally create 1 through 64, all right?
Right.
So then you split them into four conferences, and every game is played within your conference until you get to the Final Four. So there's no cream puffs anymore. Those are all gone. I mean, every one of your conference games, every game you play leading up to the Final Four is a conference game.
See, we're getting there. Like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have four 16-team conferences.
Right.
I was told maybe, like, you know, TCU goes group of five or goes.
Well, they'll split them. How about this? How about having a situation and say, well, what? Let's say you got one of these schools. Let's use Kansas, okay, football as an example, right? And they have, like, one bad year after another. Like, they're not competitive. And
relegation?
What I would like to see is where you could play your way out and other schools could play their way in. I like to do it like in a three-year situation, like the worst team over 3 years. If you don't pull a certain number of wins, you are out, and you will be replaced by a different school. They will have an opportunity to play. You have no guaranteed set spot in the so-called field of 64 if you can't hold your weight.
Yeah,
I would love to see that.
I think, you know, part of an issue for me on that, and it's not that big of an issue, I think it'd be pretty fun, is, you know, there's different financial support for different places. So, I mean, there are teams that just are never going to basically come up to, I guess that's the way in soccer too.
Survival of the fittest. If you can't hang out.
But also, who's going to go, like, in this situation, right? Kansas goes down. Let's just say. Who goes up?
Oh, there's a lot of schools that might be sitting there chomping at the bit. Because at that point, let's say you go from 130 to 64 schools. There's going to be some quality schools out there that have been dropped down to a different level, somewhere between, you know, FBS and FCS, sort of like that, you know, AAA level, so to speak, right?
Right.
And if you have a team that rattles off several wins and they suddenly are, you know, raising, I mean, go back to a Boise State when they emerged from nowhere to suddenly be recognized as a legitimate football power. We see this all the time in some of these lesser conferences where suddenly, you know, we had the Central Florida situation, right?
Okay.
And so then you have a school like that. I mean, look at the AAC. You have a lot of schools that may not make the cut to 64, and they'd be sitting in the wings. Steve. And guess what? Kansas, if you're not making it, boom, someone is going to replace you.
Utah went 13-0
Yep.
10-3, 10-3.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The 3 years before joining the Pac-12 conference.
Yes.
Joined the Pac-12 conference, went 8 wins, 5 wins, 5 wins, 9 wins. Okay?
Correct.
So putting, if you just take Boise State, UCF, whoever, and pull them up, they're just going to lose for 3 years and go back down.
Okay, well, that's fine, but saying, we'll give them an opportunity.
It doesn't really solve
well, I don't know. Who knows? There's got to be a little drop because teams get set. See, the fact that these conferences share the profits, even if two or three schools are really doing all the heavy lifting, and yet they got to share the bowl profits with these other schools that are just getting a free ride? No way.
So are you on the boat of USC leaving the Pac-12 conference? Are you like that serious about revenue splitting and stuff? There's talk about USC going independent, not really talk.
Floated rumors. If that's their choice, we still haven't addressed the Notre Dame situation.
They're going to have to join a conference.
Well, if this is the future of college football, at some point they're going to have to either join or be on the outside looking in.
I'm sure the commissioner at the ACC and I think that's Schwarbeck, right? And the
right.
commissioner Warren over at the Big Ten have called. Although Schwarbeck, I think, is the AD of Notre Dame. They've called over there and been like, "Hey, buddy, like this is happening. Where do you want to go?"
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Another big change, obviously, is in name, image, and likeness, and how this is going to affect the world of college football. And Nick Saban, the man that's at the top of the mountain, has made it clear you don't have to play in a big city to make big money. Why he made an announcement he made coming up next. Steve Harbin and Jeff Schwartz, we're immersed in college football talk right now. Oh, I love college football. By the way, from the beginning of college football, and I'm going back to the 19th century with college football and its origins and what we now call the Ivy League schools, the Yales, the Harvards, the Princetons. The reason that college football became such an instant hit for these universities is they knew from day one it was a great recruiting tool. A successful football program became an instant recruiting tool for these universities, and that's in the 1880s. So they knew this, and believe me, in those days, they had ringers. They had players out there that really were not really students because of the importance already placed on the idea that, wow, if we have a really good – Notre Dame, did anybody even know what this school existed? No. But they had the foresight that, hey, we could do that. We could create a football team and we won't even make a regional. We'll travel and we'll go places and get our name out there. So this little obscure school in the middle of nowhere, upstate Indiana, becomes a household name. And by the way, when we talk about the value of college football at these universities, I read somewhere where when Johnny Manziel won the Heisman Trophy at Texas A&M, based on the number of applications coming into that university, the increase overnight, they estimated that Heisman Trophy win for Johnny Manziel was worth about $40 million to the university.
Oh, yeah.
So when we talk about college football and its impact on these universities, it's everything. It is, you build a strong college football program, you will reap the benefits as a university. So these university presidents and all these guys, they can make a lot of noise about academics and everything else, but nothing moves the dollars like a successful football program. So that being said, Nick Saban made a comment this week. He was talking about Bryce Young. Bryce Young, if you don't know the background here, Bryce Young was a superstar quarterback at Mater Dei High School here in Southern California. Yes, the same school that produced Matt Leinart, by the way. And he had committed to USC. Made all the sense in the world. Mater Dei, Barkley was also a Mater Dei guy, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, this seemed natural. He would go to USC. And all of a sudden, he decommits. And he shows up at Alabama, Bryce Young. And if you haven't heard of Bryce Young's name now, you will next season. So Nick Saban gets out at some press conference thing, and he volunteers information that his quarterback, Bryce Young, who, by the way, hasn't even officially been named the starter of the team,
correct,
has earned nearly $1 million through this name, image, and likeness. Now, why is exactly he putting that news out there? Well, it's very simple. Nick Saban's a smart guy. He understands the recruiting of these five-star athletes is changing dramatically because now when you're sitting down with a family, the family's looking at him saying, how much money can you make for our son? And the idea that, well, we can make as much money as you need, but you're in Tuscaloosa. What about USC's in ULA? It seems like they could make more money. Nick Saban's point, and he actually said this, was our brand sells. It's not where we are geographically. It's the Alabama brand that's going to put a lot of money in your son's pockets. So I find this interesting because, again, to get back to the whole origins of college football and the early realization that a successful college football team means insane amount of money pouring into these universities, yeah. Nothing has changed, but how they're going to go about it has changed. And Nick Saban just dropped it, just saying, look, you come to Alabama, you will make more money than if you play at any other school if you're at our school. That's the message that he sent out there.
It is the message he sent out there. But we've also seen, you know, Derek King of Miami make a lot of money too. You know, I think the quarterbacks at all these schools are going to make money. But you're exactly right. This was sent out to let everyone know that that there's money to be made at Alabama. But your point about football and revenue from football is the reason why this conference realignment is happening again, right?
Yes.
Because Texas, Oklahoma football is very good. Look, Oklahoma softball, great, right? Oklahoma basketball have been good. Texas baseball was good this season. That does not matter. 85% of, or 80, you know, 85 cents on a dollar, whatever expression you want to use, is about football when it comes to TV rights deals. This is the thing I was arguing yesterday with Kansas fans on the internet about. Everyone's like, well, Kansas is a national recognizable brand. And I was like, you're good at basketball, but like that doesn't do anything for TV deals. Your football program made more money last year than your basketball program. So when you look at conference realignment, and we talked about the Pac-12 earlier, you need to pick schools that fit that football model, right?
Yeah. The Kentucky is the brand. Same way. It's like, what do you do with Kentucky? What do you do with Duke? What do you do with Kansas? What do you do with North Carolina? These superstar college basketball programs whose football teams don't have the same impact.
Well, look, we're seeing North Carolina with Sam Howell and Mac Brown, right? Try to increase that impact.
And that conference, it's all about Clemson.
Sure, it is. It is. I understand that. Look, UCLA football, right? I mean, everyone's excited for what might happen this season with Chip, but he's not gonna win.
Are they excited? Conference. You keep telling me I should be excited. Am I excited about UCLA football?
I don't know. I don't know if you should be excited. I think I said people are being excited.
It's a basketball school.
It is a basketball school. I need to see more from Dorian Thompson Robinson. And UCLA, by the way, their basketball program will be a favorite to win the title this year. But yes, that doesn't really drive any commerce in the Pac-12 conference. So when you look at conference realignment, it is about money. Because there's no other competitive reason why Oklahoma and Texas are leaving the Big 12. Oklahoma has won the Big 12 now, I think, 12 years in a row. They made the playoff four times. Texas has actually not been really good at football for quite a couple of years now. But they're going for money, right? Because Oklahoma's going to have a much tougher road now to get a conference championship. They'll make the playoff every year in the SEC, most likely. Texas is going to have a really tough time to win as many games as they think in the SEC conference.
They just got to get the right coach. Mac Brown came in there and was able to get Texas back on tap.
People think Sark could be that guy. I'm curious to see if he will be that guy. But
I know one thing about the University of Texas and that athletic department. Money-wise, it's the top of the mountain. There is not a richer athletic department than the University of Texas.
And they'll be even richer now going to the SEC if they win football games. I think they're looking at a couple years of 6, 7, 8 wins and pretty unhappy. The reason why Oklahoma and Texas will struggle in the SEC, for the most part, is depth, especially in the lines. Right? Oklahoma has a fantastic offensive line. Mm-hmm. They've been great for years now. It's a little different when you play SEC defensive lines every week.
Yeah.
And then what happens to your depth, right? If you're a defensive lineman on Texas and Oklahoma, if one guy gets hurt, it's hard to find that second guy. In Alabama, if one D tackle gets hurt, guess what? You put the next 5-star guy in.
Well, I just go back to Nebraska moving to the Big Ten. How'd that work for Nebraska? Nebraska completely fell off the map. Completely.
Yeah, and this is something that, I was talking to some buddies this week. ACC Media Day was here in Charlotte. I went out with, and they're asking about Oregon's playoff chances. I said, look, I don't think this year, I think next year is really the year when we kind of have our entire roster of 4- and 5-star guys. Our quarterback situation is a little different. But I was talking about like defensive tackle, for example, right? Mm-hmm. Defensive tackle. We have two guys. They're good. But we don't have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 right now. When you're playing in Alabama in the playoff, you need to have the two backups be just as good as your starters, right? Because you have to rotate those guys through, right? We have Kayvon Thibodeau, a number, you know, the first player probably taken who's not a quarterback in the draft next year. We don't have the second Kayvon Thibodeau. Like, so the depth of an Oregon or an Oklahoma or Texas moving to an SEC program, same, by the way, of if Boise moved up, if BYU moved up, it's tough depth-wise to compete. So Oklahoma and Texas, again, are doing this for the money because they're not doing this to win more football games.
Right. And remember Oklahoma's record in the college football playoff. They've been in it 4 times. They're 0-4.
Oh, I tell them that quite often. Don't worry. Yeah, Oregon has one win. Oregon has one win.
Oregon does have a win, but Oklahoma is winless. Competitive games. They had a couple of chances, but fell short. All right, coming up on the other side, what's in a name? What's in a name? Okay, we're going to talk about that. But first, let's find out what's trending right now. Speaking of a name, Ralph Ervin, folks. Ralph Ervin.
That's me.
That's you.
Lots of sports going on today, but we'll start with Major League Baseball, where Arizona was able to come back and tie it up with the Cubs. Dalton Varsho, a 2-run homer in the top of the 5th, and Arizona and Chicago tied it 2 as the Diamondbacks bat in the top of the 7th inning. Meanwhile, at Fenway, Boston gets a run on the scoreboard. Kike Hernandez, an RBI triple in the 1st, and the Red Sox with a 1-0 lead over the Yankees as they play now in the bottom of the 2nd inning. The first day of the Olympics is officially in the books. And so far, 11 medals have been awarded. The top, well, 3 of them going to China. The Chinese have 3 gold, 1 bronze. They sit atop the medal standings. The first coming in shooting to Qian Yang. She takes the first shooting medal. The U.S. so far not yet to earn a medal. 6 days ago, Richard Carapaz finished 3rd in the Tour de France. Today, the Ecuadorian rider won the Olympic road racing cycling event, finishing over a minute ahead of the field. He is just the 3rd Ecuadorian gold medal winner of all time. U.S. team action, lots of action. Softball 3-0 so far in this tournament. They beat Mexico 2-0. Water polo, women's water polo, 25-4. They sink Japan. Women's soccer bounces back from midweek loss. They beat New Zealand 6-1. Men's volleyball sweeps France with a 3-0 win. And Juancho Hernan Gomez has been removed from the Spanish Olympic basketball team, that at the request of the Minnesota Timberwolves, as Hernan Gomez is recovering from a separated shoulder. Now we send it back. It is Fox Sports Radio, Steve Hartman and Jeff Schwartz.
All right, well, don't go too far, Ralph, because I want to get you in on this discussion. All right, so big story this week was Deion Sanders, who is now the head football coach, second-year coach at Jackson State. And he walked out of his press conference when a reporter from the Clarion Ledger called him Deion instead of what Deion Sanders had asked everybody to call him, which is Coach Sanders. Now, at some point during this press conference, an upset Deion said this: "You don't call Nick Saban Nick. Don't call me Deion. If you call Nick Nick, you'll get cussed out on the spot. So don't do that to me. Treat me like Saban." Well, here was Nick Saban's response to what Deion Sanders had to say.
"Look, I respond to just about anything, and I've been called just about everything. So not something that's really important to me, but I think everybody should have the opportunity to sort of create or make the way their expectation is of how they get addressed, and not something that's really that significant to me."
Yeah, so in other words, what Nick Saban is people have been calling me Nick for years. A lot of people call me Nick. Yeah. I don't know what Deion is talking about, that I have to be addressed as coach. I respond to everything, but he also made the point, if Deion Sanders makes it clear, don't call me Deion, call me Coach Sanders, call me Coach Sanders. Now, I wanted to bring in Ralph in on this as well, because, Ralph, you have a whole different mentality. I put it this way. I have always addressed, and I'm talking about football, okay? I don't care if the guy is an assistant backup tight end coach. I always refer to a football coach at any level as coach. It's just the way I've always done it. I've even coaches that I've known on a personal level, I've always called coach when I'm addressing them, even in person. So that's been my mentality. But Ralph, you have a completely different mindset on this.
Well, in press conferences over, and I mean, I've been doing this now for decades, in press conferences, coaches are referred to by their first name more often than not. And the interesting thing with this story is first Deion says, oh, I didn't walk off. I was at the end of my time. But then understand that he was upset with this publication because they had published something very recently about a domestic issue involving Deion from years back when he was in Dallas. So there's talk that he was just upset with this guy. But no, Nick Saban, John Gruden, Mike Riley, as you know, in San Diego, Steve.
I called him coach. I still call him coach.
And most everyone else called him Mike. I mean, that's your choice. That's how you... But most media members, especially beat media, that work around this person, this isn't their coach. This is a guy, and I'm going to refer to him as his name because
That part of it makes sense to me, and it's weird because, like you say, he's not my coach. I mean, if he's coaching the team, he's the coach. I understand that. I don't know. I don't know about this, Jeff. I mean, I have always referred to football coaches in particular as coach.
Well, I have because I played with them, and I still call, I still see a lot of them. I still call them coach, just as not even respect, just like I just have always called them coach. And coaches, by the way, call everyone coach anyways. Like they'll call me coach too. That's just why I don't go. That just was what they do. Deion got what he wanted out of this attention for Deion and Jackson State.
There you go.
That's what he got out of it. He doesn't really care. Look, calls him. I bet if he said, "Hey, prime time," he'd be like fine with that, right? But he wants to get. Pub to his program. This is the way to do it. Now, I understand if Deion said, hey, please call me Coach Sanders, and someone did not. But the first time it happened, I think you would just be like, hey, man, like, hey, I'd like to be called Coach Sanders. Okay, like, this wasn't, I think it was the first time, maybe, right? Like, that this happened. In this man, he blew up on him. And then there's a video that comes out of someone called Nick Saban, Nick 8 or 9 or 10 times. So, again, this was a ploy to get attention on him and his program, and it worked. It 100% worked. And I think someone will call him Deion next press conference. I don't know if it's going to change very much. To Ralph's point, some people are uncomfortable calling another grown man coach when you might be older than that coach. To call him coach might feel a little weird for you.
Oh, everyone I talk to now is younger than me. I mean, I mean, seriously.
I
call them coach. Now, if I were to say, all right, from now on, I want to be known as GOAT. Okay, just call me GOAT. All right. And like, I mean, if he wants to be addressed by the media as Coach Sanders, is that a problem?
I think the issue with what he said was more about how he framed it with Nick Saban, because Nick Saban does not care, right?
Right. Because he said you'll get cussed out on the spot if you call him Nick. And Nick Saban
just said, if Deion had just said, "Hey, sir, I'd like to be called Coach Sanders from now on,"
right?
And that would, in the middle of the press conference, he said that. Okay, great. It's not a big story. We might not even know about it, right? Maybe it's a blurb on Twitter or something. But instead, he blew up at this guy. And then he used Nick Saban, of course, which again was wrong because Nick Saban gets called Nick all the time.
Right.
So that's where the issue arose, was he just incorrectly said, told us how Nick Saban would respond. Again, Deion got what he wanted out of it. He got attention. Do you remember last year he started, I think, 3-0, 2-1, something like that? And then I think they finished 3-2, 3-3. Not much talk about Coach Sanders anymore, right? Like, this is a way to get his name back in the news.
Interesting. I think you're 100% right on this. He really doesn't care one way or the other. He was just trying to make noise. And by bringing Nick Saban's name into the conversation, it elevated the story, especially when he was completely wrong. He said, "Don't call me Deion. If you call Nick, he'll cuss you out on the spot. So don't do that to me." And Nick Saban's like, "What are you talking about? People call me Nick all the time." I mean, I mean,
that's how people refer to other adults, to Ralph's point, right?
Did you ever address a coach during your playing career as anything other than coach? Ever at any level?
No, but I think.
Did you ever call a coach by his first name on the field in a practice or anything else?
No, never. But When I was in Detroit, my offensive line coach was Ron Prince, and I was 4 years older than the next oldest guy in that room. So and I was only 29, 30. So I wasn't even that old. But Ryan and I were just like, had a good relationship because I was just the old guy and he was the, like, so I might have called him Ron, like in his, you know, if we go spoke in his office.
But not in front of everybody else.
Probably not, no. No. I don't think I'd ever have done that, no. Mm-hmm. I just call him Ron, like, in his office. But even then, that's probably the only coach I've ever done that with. I don't think I've done that with any other coach. And even now, if I saw my former coach, I'd be like, hey, coach, I would not call him by their first name. It just feels odd to me. Because I call everyone coach for so many years.
Well, part of it also for Ralph is that he worked inside the UCLA athletic department for a number of years. So he sees all these coaches on a personal basis, you know, day in and day out. So you can't just call everybody coach, you know.
This predates that, though.
Hmm?
I mean, this was, you know, when I was covering the Buccaneers, when I was covering the Chargers, when I was covering the Padres, I mean, back in the 90s, this is...
I never code, you know, Mike Riley is like the nicest individual ever to be called a coach. And I know people called him Mike. I never did. I always call him coach. It's just me. I'm sorry. I'm not saying I'm right or wrong. It's just my preference. The problem is baseball managers. See, even in college level baseball, they don't call them managers. They call them coach. Coach, coach, coach. Then I get a manager on and I go, what do I call this guy? I can't call him coach. Call him Skip? I don't like that. So I have to admit, some baseball managers, whether it was Bruce Bochy, I call him Boch, or a Tommy Lasorda back in the day, Tommy. That's the only, like, managers. Why is that the only sport that Major League, why aren't they coaches? Manager? What's that about? I don't know. Threw me off my game on that one. All right, on the other side, did you not predict the Phoenix Suns to win the NBA championship, Jeff?
Probably. My basketball picks have not been excellent. I did wager on the Bucks. And I made a lot of money at the end.
Well, we talked about that last week, and we were thinking, it looks like the Bucks are ready to roll this thing out as they did. The question moving forward is this now Giannis's league? Has Giannis surpassed LeBron, KD, Steph as the current face of the NBA? We'll talk about what's next for the NBA coming up next. Steve Harbin and Jeff Schwartz want to thank the crew today. We had the real Don on today, working the board. The real Don. How are you, Don? All good?
I'm doing well. I'm doing really well.
It's really good to see you again.
Great to see you too.
Are you masked up all masked up again?
Yeah, it's no political statement, I promise.
we walk into the building now, Jeff, and they got the mask signs back up. So the mask signs are back up again.
I started packing for LA and well, I was like, babe, where are all the masks at? And so she pulled out the boxes. We have a mask. And
you're going to have to bring them out here. And, yeah.
Oh, for the airplane, I knew I had to anyways.
Sure.
The frustrating part is, like, I did everything I was told, right?
That's what we were told. You get vaccinated, which we did, then you're okay. And apparently that's not the case. So Ralph Ervin, who's made his presence felt all day long.
Ralph's upset about a buddy of mine at Fox Sports who put out an all Pac-12 list. And there are some gripes that are legitimate, but fired up over the linebacking core of
How about he has Eric Weddle on the list and he didn't actually play in the Pac-12?
Yeah, there's some.
When he was at Utah, selections. They weren't in the conference, right?
I know. Oh, no, correct.
So how could he be on the all Pac-12?
Don't get Steve started on Jerry Robinson or
Kenny Easley.
Or Kenny Easley.
Come on, three-time AP first team All Americans, members of the College Football Hall of Fame. How are they not in?
The tough part about these lists, is they need to be done by eras, right? Because you can make the case.
Kenny Easley would have been great in any era.
But my point about, like, okay, is that for quarterback or for wide or for lineman, right? Like, a lineman in the 60s is probably not as good as Jonathan Ogden, right?
Well, I don't know. Like, how do you compare John Elway with Andrew Luck based on what they did at Stanford? You know that John Elway never got to a single bowl game in 4 years at Stanford?
Well, this is the thing about Matt Leinart on this list is the best Pac-12 quarterback. I disagree with that. I think there's many other options for that. He was very successful at USC during that time period, but I don't think he's easily
Is he better than
talented.
Andrew Luck?
I don't think he's better than Mariota.
All right, there you go.
Is he better than Carson Palmer?
Carson Palmer was a one-year wonder at USC. If you look at his first 4 years at USC, he had a redshirt year that ended after about three games. He was a gross underachiever for 4 years, and then he had an explosive fifth year the year he won the Heisman. Matt Leinart was dominant for 3 years.
Yeah, he's no Cade McNown.
Cade McNown's in the College Football Hall of Fame, deservedly so. He had two huge years at UCLA.
Yeah, but that, I'll never forgive that team for that loss to the Hurricanes in 98 to end the season. That was unforgivable.
I want to quickly acknowledge our great producer, Lee DeLapp, right now. Lee, just getting back to the Aaron Rodgers situation, your prediction. What do they mean by last dance?
This is the last dance. They will be coming up on their last season in Green Bay.
All right, so you're going to see Rodgers to Davante Adams in 2021.
And they'll win it all.
There you go. So that's his prediction. There you go. Got that one in. Hey, I want another prediction from you, Jeff, on the Milwaukee Bucks. Now that they are the NBA champions for the first time in 50 years, and Giannis was absolutely spectacular. Incredible, right? He had that hyperextended knee. We're thinking even if he plays in the finals, agreed, he'll be a shadow of himself. He was out of this world. So in your opinion now, is Giannis past Steph, KD, LeBron as the face of the NBA?
I mean, today, at the moment, sure. I don't think it's the face of the NBA. I got to give him credit, Budenholzer, their coach, their team. I mean, I thought that this team was, and it's interesting because no one's really praising Budenholzer, their coach, for anything in the finals. We're praising Giannis. I didn't think Giannis had this level of play in him. He was fabulous. He deserves all the credit he deserves. He's a very likable superstar, right? He's very humble, down to earth. Obviously, in big moments, plays better, which is fantastic, which is what you want from your superstars. But, you know, this feels like a one-hit wonder type team. You look at a healthy Nets team, healthy Clippers team, which, of course, is an issue because Kawhi's never healthy.
Kawhi's not even going to play. They say Kawhi, if he plays at all next year, it's going to be late in the season.
A healthy Lakers team.
Yeah.
But, you know, it gives credence to staying home, right, and getting, you know, and building something. Now, again, it's easy to stay home when you have a Chris Middleton and you have a Drew Holiday and you have players there that can fill the role spot. You know, for example, LeBron in Cleveland was able to do that. He weren't good enough players around him. So it was fun to watch Giannis. It was fun to watch that team play. It was fun to watch Milwaukee celebrate and win with fans in the crowd. We talked about that earlier with the Olympics. But he's not the face of the league, in my opinion. I don't think anyone will be until LeBron leaves. And then after LeBron's out, we can talk about who that might be.
All right, let me ask you this, because I know you like to wager a little bit. Are you all over these Olympic Games? You feel like there's some easy money to be made on these Olympic Games?
I mean, probably like USA softball, women's soccer. I know they lost their first match. Maybe women's soccer. I mean, I don't think I could bet on the USA men's basketball team right now.
I wouldn't bet on them right now. I mean, where's their mindset?
Maybe some track and field. I am not going to gamble on the Olympics. I gamble a lot of things. I mean, maybe. No, I can't imagine I do it. I just can't see myself.
Are you putting out a future bet on your San Francisco Giants to win the World Series right now as they maintain the best record
Major League
Baseball?
I have a
beating
plus
the Dodgers 3 out of 4 at Dodger Stadium. Are you all in?
Thank you, Jensen. Thank you, Kinley Jensen. I have I have a future NL West ticket on them, though.
Really?
Oh, yeah.